CliffCentral.com.
Good Friday morning, everybody.
Yes, it is the end of the week. Hooray, we got here, we made it. We got through to, I think it's the second last Friday of May, actually. So, this is really, you know, I mentioned it the other morning. June's the middle of the year, and then all your best laid plans for 2022 better be either underway or you can shelve them for 2023. There's lots to get to this morning. We've got Leanne Moll, we've got me, we've got Ben joining us a little bit later on. It's going to be a fun morning. Also got George Meany dropping by at about 10 to 8 this morning. So we've got lots of things to get to. I hope you're ready for a clanger. It's going to be busy. It's things on the agenda today. It's not going to be one of those shows where we just meander around. There's an actual agenda. You know when people say, I didn't really come to this meeting with an agenda. Yeah, you did. This morning you did. What does it say on your
What did you used to say? It's chatterbox. Oh. Remember we got these mugs a while back. They're Jamie Oliver mugs.
Oh, I wondered. I've got one that's similar, and I just saw yours, and I thought, yes. Okay. Yeah, I haven't used mine for ages, but I think it's in the cupboard somewhere. I was talking to someone yesterday. She's a psychologist, and she works with all kinds of people, substance abuse, addiction, all that kind of thing. And she has this one patient who's a kleptomaniac, and she'll go – now, she's been arrested – not arrested, but she's been warned by various shops a couple of times because she – you know, she'll just put things in her pocket or whatever. And then when she gets to the till, because they're watching you on the cameras, so it's stupid to even try that stuff. And then she gets to the tills, and they say to her, what about the stuff in your pockets? She's, and she's like really good at explaining this stuff, which is why she hasn't been arrested yet. But I was listening to this story, because she went on to say, oh, no, she also goes to places like Westpac, and she gets like, you know, 8 of the same Tupperware, and then she gets 5 whisks, and she gets like two packets of like 200 scouring pads and things like that. And I was listening to this and got quite uncomfortable.
Yes, because I was going to say that sounds like your shopping list.
Well, yeah, I'm not a klepto. I know I've never stolen anything from a shop, but that's what I do, right? And I said to her, sure. I really feel for this woman. And, you know, I'm not the most empathetic person in the world. So she looked at me like this. She went, what? I said, look, this woman doesn't sound like she is a bad person. Now, this is not what I would – normally I'd be, to lock her up, throw away the key.
Yeah.
You know?
Right,
but it's because it's a little close to home. I mean, when I go to the shops, I do that. I buy like 5 of these, 10 of those. I mean, obviously not expensive things, but I'm talking about like household stuff. And, you know, I stock up on dumb stuff, which maybe I don't need. And what made me think of that now is that you've got that mug, and I've got one in my cupboard, but I haven't used it for ages. And it probably would be better going to somebody else. I mean, I've got enough cups and mugs that if 50 people had to come here tomorrow, I'd be able to give each one a cup, right?
Yeah.
You don't need more than that. Who on earth, what am I, going to host a banquet for like 400? In which case, you'd probably get caterers in anyway. What do you need more than 25 plates for?
It kind of borders a little bit on the hoarder type of mentality. Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, some people put hoarder and filth in the same box, but it's not necessarily that.
Yeah.
There's also an OCD element attached to it. I mean, of course, this should be Monday and Dr. Hanan would be able to tell us.
Right.
But it's kind of a touch of everything. It's also probably one of the most forgivable mental illnesses.
Well,
because like you said, she's a good person. You know, you wouldn't say that of somebody who's totally off the chart.
Yeah. And I mean, she's not necessarily hurting other people. Not when she's stealing, she is. But when she's buying a whole bunch of stuff, if she can afford it and she's not like putting the family in debt, and because God alone knows, you know, they put up interest rates again this week. And I'll tell you what, if you owe money, in South Africa at the moment, which is most of us. I say most of us because I'm including myself in that. I have a bond. You know, I have repayments on a bunch of things. One thing I don't have, because I used to listen with both ears when, you know, we had people like Joe Camino on, because he would say to us, you can't have credit card debt. If you have credit card debt, you're being stupid because they charge you a fortune in interest. And he's right. So I don't have credit card debt, but Jesus, I think a lot of people do. Just not because they want to have credit card debt or because they're not careful, but because there's just nowhere else they can get money to pay the groceries. And I was thinking about this whole thing of having too much of everything, and the klepto story that I told you just now, because I reckon I could go through my house now, and you've been doing this when you moved, you did this. So it made me think of it. Go through everything you don't need. I don't think you need more than 12 dinner plates. I don't think you need more than 12 wine glasses. You really don't. I mean, like maybe you keep an extra 3 or 4 in case something breaks, right? But everything else, I reckon I could probably have a little jumble sale. Not because, well, maybe because, you know, who doesn't need spare cash? But also, you could clear out some of the clutter. I mean, how can I not have used the mug that you're using this morning when I have the same mug and I've got hundreds of others? It's stupid. It's just dumb.
It's very strange. It's also got a lot to do with how you were brought up and a lot of things from your past. It's kind of very Freudian in that way. I think about the fact that I started collecting things for my home before I had a home. And that was very much my mom's influence.
Yeah.
You know, you need to start buying towels and
also, I mean, you talk about that. So that's also where it comes from for me, I suppose, because I mean, we didn't always have money growing up. I mean, there was a time when we really didn't have any money. I remember my brother and I around 90, Italia 90, the only real decoration we had in our room, which was tiny, was like Italia 90 Coke cans for all the different teams that were playing in the World Cup. And I was like, well, those were the only toys or things we could collect. That was it. Coke cans.
Jeez.
I mean, and we loved those.
When you think of kids' bedrooms now,
yeah, well,
they're completely jacked out.
I look at my nephews and I think, they've got everything a kid could need. But I'm glad that we didn't have everything at one stage, because otherwise I wouldn't appreciate so much of the stuff that I have worked hard to get and that I live with now. At the same time, you know, your parents and my parents, I suppose, grew up in the same era where it was important to host dinner parties. Now, I don't know when last you had a dinner party, but this might even be a spillover from the previous generation or the one before that, where you would have a formal sit-down dinner. There would be 3 courses at very least, and you'd have different glasses for different courses, and you'd have different, you know, spanners, knives and forks for different courses. And you'd have to have, I mean, my mother, I always remember it was immaculately done in the days when she used to, and she still does this. You'd be, you know, matching dinner plates and side plates, and then there'd be, you know, all the table stuff, which would also match. I mean, I don't know how many people still do that. And unless you are a, I don't know, an ambassador, you know, and even they, I mean, even the ambassadors, and I've been to a couple of embassies in the last year or two, and they've scaled down. They now do informal garden parties and, you know, their drinks and things, but it's not these formal sit-down dinners. And look, I'm grateful because I know how to eat and how to behave and what to do and, you know, which things to use at which time as a result of that. But it doesn't happen anymore. And frankly, if you did have something like that, you would hire the stuff and then send it back the next day. Don't you think?
I think, sorry to bring it up, but COVID changed a lot of this.
No, you're right.
Behavior.
You're right. Yeah. But this was long ago.
We've just forgotten, you know. I mean, I remember my mom had a book called The Relaxed Hostess, and it was all about being this perfect hostess and having everything done in the home and, you know, having these, you had a schedule, a diary for your dinner parties. You were either going to one or hosting one.
Well, Congo Chris is hilarious. He says, just invite some of your Greek friends over for a Joel. You won't have any plates left. Oppa. Well, I've got five Greek friends, like who are close friends of mine. People that I know really well that I see regularly. And they've never broken a plate or a glass. so that is such a stereotype. Carl says, what the fuck? Are you trying to tell me how many plates I should need? There are 15 people in my immediate family. Yeah, okay, that's a lot of people. It's a lot of people. Gale Force says, when I buy jeans or shoes, I buy 2 to 3 pairs. I grew up fairly poor, so I think it's overcompensation. Fear that I won't be able to buy it again in the future. That's a big admission. I reckon I'm the same. Mm. Maybe that's part of it too. Because we didn't have options. It was like, you got that. You got your school uniform and you got those clothes and it's this much. It's not a lot. So, you know what? Now it's like, have cupboards full. And I promise you, there are clothes in my cupboard. I've got suits. I mean, I don't know why. I'm maybe, again, overcompensating or something. But I've got suits. Someone said to me the other day, I was wearing a suit somewhere. And I said, oh, you look really good in a suit. And I've never seen you in a suit. And I thought, you know, that's a good point. I don't really wear them anymore. But I've got this whole cupboard full. And I kid you not, like 20 suits. What do I need that for? Some of them I don't even look good in anymore. They're not even fashionable looking suits anymore. They're like old school, you know.
That's the thing.
So why do I keep this stuff? It's so weird. And hearing the story of the klepto, I'm like, you got to check that out. It might be an area of some concern. That's all we're saying.
No, I don't think it's that bad. And I think, I also think it's an age thing where when you're younger, you're planning for this, what you feel like is going to be a lifetime of stuff ahead of you. 20 years down the line, you're thinking, why did I buy 4 dinner sets?
Yeah.
You know,
So DK,
life goes by so quickly.
DK says, gee, if your folks did formal dinner parties, there was no shortage of money. Well, actually, there was a long period where we didn't have any of that, but we never kind of had to pawn off the good crockery or cutlery, if you know what I mean. It was that stuff was kind of held in store for the next generation. So we weren't going to sell that. We might have sold other things, but we didn't sell that stuff because it's still there. And it wasn't a question of like this or die. It was just there wasn't any spare cash going around. And I think there are a lot of people who've been through at least one patch in their life where they've gone, you know.
I just remembered something.
This. Yeah.
I remember, you know, when your parents always said to you, we can't do this, we can't do that, you can't have this, money's tight.
Yeah.
You know, things aren't great at the moment, but that's because you were probably asking for the latest camera or roller skates or whatever.
Mm.
And they were just putting their foot down.
Yeah.
And I remember speaking to my bestie down the road in the neighborhood and saying, oh, my parents are really battling for money. And her parents came to visit my parents and knocked on the door and said, I'm so embarrassed. And said, I believe you're battling for money. We'd like to offer you a loan.
Oh, wow.
In the meantime, my parents were actually rolling in cash.
How embarrassing for you.
A massive printing factory.
Oh, God. They must have.
They were just being cautious.
And they must have been so annoyed with you because now you've embarrassed them in the neighborhood. Because, I mean, who wants to be known for being poor? You know, you got pride. And.
Yeah.
Oh, it's that really sucks. I remember once. Because my dad just never like brought us sweets and things, and we, you know, we begged him. We'd say, oh, you know, please, Dad, just on your way home from work, just like bring us a little sweet or something. And he always said no. And then the one day he's like, I bought you guys some sweets. So we were like so fucking excited. We were jumping out of our skins, and he produced like a packet of Halls. You know, like those. Now, I don't know any kid in the world who wants a Halls as a sweet. When you think of sweet, you're like licorice or, you know, chips or like wine gums or marshmallows or whatever. You're like, oh, this is going to be so exciting. And he produces this packet of Halls. It's like, dude, really? Anyway, look, I mean, we're not going to sit here and compare our horror stories. There are lots of people in South Africa who are right now having a tough time. So I'm not going to make light of this, but it is, you know, you go through these ups and downs. Everybody does. And you think what you're dealing with now is what you're going to be dealing with forever. And then you don't know. You could hit a real vein of luck, or it stays shitty for a long time. I got a CV from a friend of mine yesterday who I've known for about 10 or 12 years, and he's just been laid off and he's looking for work. And he sent me the CV to say, like, hey, can you just ask around if there's anything going? And I'm going to have to see what I can do there, obviously. But
as my 102-year-old grandfather always said, you never know what's around the corner.
That sounds like a real old man saying.
Yeah, absolutely. But also, I've had a lot of, because it's just so widespread at the moment with people battling for money, I've had a lot of debt consolidation spam calls on my phone. And I've got into the habit now, and it's actually quite exhilarating, where they say, you know, we help you with credit card debt, shopping card debt, all of this sort of debt. And I go, I don't have any debt. And there's just the silence on the other side, even though I'm lying.
Yeah, but I mean,
there's the silence on the other side.
They never hear that. Like, they never hear that.
No, they just stop and they're like, you don't have a credit card? I'm like, no. It's just lying.
Well, yeah.
I put down the phone and I feel like I'm, you know, soaring in the air and happy and debt free.
They're like, wow, you're the richest. Listen, that's the funny thing. If you can say you have no debt, you are like among the richest South Africans. And I mean like the top 1%, like the 1% Bernie Sanders is always going about in America. The 1% of the 1%, you're in the richest category of people, and you're going to be rich for the rest of your life. Just because you don't owe anybody money, it's not because you have money in the bank. You might have 10 rand in your account, but if you don't owe anyone, you're rich. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Something to think about.
And it's the same. Sometimes, you know, a beggar will knock on my window and ask for money when I'm driving. And I think to myself, Guy, you know, I really sympathize with your situation, and I've been in really bad situations through COVID where I've wondered how I'm going to buy food. But to be quite honest, I owe more money than you do. I'm actually in more debt than you are.
You're
in a better financial situation than I am.
Yeah. Well, you know, there are lots of people here with interesting stories. I mean, listen to B. She says, I had a few clients tell me their expenses every month are over 100,000 rand. I've never felt more poor. You know, if you add up, though, I mean, I just got this email today. I didn't know we were going to talk about this. So I promise you, this one wasn't on the agenda I told you about earlier. But this came in that Eskom are now putting up their rates, right? Your levy statement now includes the latest Eskom increase of 9.61% and the affordability subsidy increase of 14.26%. So that means that the levy for the property has gone. I don't know if it's worth owning a property. Yeah. I said this the other day. It's really not. So you consider all those things. It's not difficult to see what B is saying here about 100,000 rand. You know, if you have a certain kind of house, a certain kind of car, and this is why we've all just got to be realistic and like scale down wherever we can. It's unbelievable. Gail Force says, my only debt is my bond. My mum had an issue with debt, so it scared me straight. Parallel Parking says, I'm rich. Good for you. That's great. Natasha, this is amazing. She says, I'm super grateful I'm debt-free. I used my inheritance to clear it all. I'm poor now, but at least I'm debt-free. Well, again, better use for your inheritance than anything else. Well done.
Interest is the biggie.
No. Congo Chris.
I can't believe how much money we're putting in.
Congo Chris, what? Maybe the real wealth is all the friends we made along the way.
you know you're speaking shit, Congo Chris.
It's great. All right. Well, let's not go down this track any further. We've been down this road. There's lots of other good stuff to talk about. So apparently this weekend is going to be freezing. I'm going to read from the headlines. This is the first of the headlines for this morning, and we need to know this. I mean, my God, you don't want to, but trust me, you need to. It's apparently going to be horrible. The weather's going to be shit. There's going to be snow all over. Floods again in KZN. Who wants that, right? Who?
No.
Who in the world wants that? So let me tell you where it is. Here Comes the Snow is the title of the article. Great. That's what we really need. It's not even June yet. But there's a cutoff low-pressure system, and cutoff is not Eskom in this case. It develops over the northwestern interior of the country by Friday. Widespread rainfall expected over the southern and central parts from today onwards. Drought-stricken parts of the Eastern Cape can expect some light relief. They'll have between 24 hours of rainfall over the region. That's very good. Light snowfall is expected over high-lying areas of the western and eastern Cape, spreading to the Lesotho-Drakensberg region by the weekend. Parts of KZN will take extra care due to pre-existing conditions caused by last month's floods. Soil is likely to be saturated, which could lead to localized flooding. Snowfalls as deep as 2 to 5 centimeters can be expected overnight in the Western Cape in high-lying areas. Minimum temperatures drop drastically, struggling to reach 8 degrees, and maximum temperatures not expected to exceed 14. This makes me immediately like freezing and chilly, and I rub my hands together. And so I think this weekend, if you had any plans, keep them indoors.
Yeah, and kind of load up on the gas canisters instead of paying for electricity. My word.
Well, last night, the power went off. It was Eskom from 8 until 10:30, I think. And sitting around with candles and things, you can feel sorry for yourself. But, you know, if you're under a blanket or whatever, and don't complain. So I didn't. I thought, like, all right, I'll make the most of this. I'm not going to sit here and moan the whole time. But there is something worth noting here, and I'm just going to quickly play this for you before we get to Ben and some other headlines. But I thought this was interesting. This is on ENCA last night.
Now brace yourselves for Stage 8 power cuts. Energy expert Mike Rousseau says this is indeed a reality, and the Stage 8 consumers will be without
stage
power for 48
eight.
Hours over 4 days. There's already been 25 days of rolling blackouts this year.
At the moment, there's a better than 50% chance that we're going to go above level 3 and 4 and so on. As I said, this is because they're not in control of the situation. So there's a good chance that we'll see higher levels of load shedding. To what extent is hard to predict because they don't even know what they're going to have tomorrow or the next day or whatever. So all they're doing is reacting to that and load shedding. And so it continues.
Jesus. And that okay.
There was an echo. So we heard load shedding.
Oh, but there was load shedding. He did. That's what he said. And he's the grumpiest looking man in the world. Like, did you see that guy? He's a no bullshit guy. I mean, like, if that dude says to you, there's going to be a lot of shit on the way, you're like, well, all right.
Load shitting.
Yeah. We'll just stand by on that front. Thanks very much. Unreal.
I hate to say it, but, you know, I've heard of, apparently it's normal in Zimbabwe to have maybe 8 hours a day of electricity.
Oh, wow. I don't know how the economy is meant to survive in that sort of situation, but, you know, like South Africans always do, I suppose we'll make a plan. It's not ideal, and obviously we know who's to blame for this. I love this. It was either a tweet or on Instagram or something. Eskom is asking us to stop using electricity in order for them to give us more electricity so we can avoid not having electricity, even though not having electricity would allow Eskom to give us extra electricity that we shouldn't use. That's someone called Funny Carp on I mean, it's just hilarious, right?
So frustrating.
It makes no sense. It's like it was written by a comedy writer. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, we joke about like Stage 8. Remember there was that video that went around where someone from Eskom comes and blows out your candles at Stage 8. But
yes.
I didn't know it was an actual thing that could actually happen, you know?
Yeah, I think winter's going to be really, really tight.
What the hell is Stage 8? It sounds like there will be no... Oh, hang on.
Blown out his modem.
Sorry. No, I went into Stage... I went into Stage 8.
Thought so.
Oh, my God. All right. It is 6:30. Ben is going to be joining us in just a moment or two. We'd like to hear from you. You can send us an email at contact@cliffcentral.com, or you can just join in the live show on the YouTubes. which is easy to do, and join the comments. I've just got to say again, on I think it was Monday or Tuesday, I by mistake blocked Sanele, who's like a regular listener and one of our fans. Now, the old Gareth would have said, ah, well, too bad. So, Sanele. But I don't know. I think the only way for him to get back in now is to like create a new email address or something. So, So Sanele, if you're listening to us, just come back. I swear I didn't mean it. I wasn't trying. Yeah. It was totally a slip of my, you know, I clicked on the wrong thing. I didn't know I was so powerful. I didn't know I could ban someone. I had no idea if I'd had that kind of power. I mean, wow. Maybe I would have
abused
it.
You and your God complex.
I know. I should know this stuff.
But it did seem easy to get wrong because you did block somebody else and it said is blocked for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And then when you blocked this person, when you blocked Sanele, it just went, it didn't say for five minutes.
Poor Sanele
can't. Permanent.
Sanele can never come back, which is terrible. So create a new email address or whatever. I feel bad about that. All right. So what are you doing for this cold weekend, ass?
I have a birthday party for 3 2-year-olds.
Oh, that's going to be fantastic. So, how do you end up with having to go to 2 2-year-olds' birthday parties? That seems a little out of your age range.
You know, I'm a Kazanti to my cousin's child. Mm. So it's his second birthday. And then her husband's brother, or sister rather, has twins. And they were born at around the same time. So they celebrate each year with all three of them together. So it'll be on the 22nd of May in 2022 at 2 o'clock.
Shit, that's
second
cool.
Second birthday for the twins and Micah's nephew. So, yeah, it'll be crazy, you know. But there's this great place. There is always somewhere where you can take lots of kids to and just – the staff understand.
Oh, the parents. What the brief is. Parents just they have this this incredible network where they find out about these places, and these places are making a fortune because there are only a handful of kid friendly places in South Africa. I mean, they're more than you think, but unless you're a parent, you don't know about them. And people who are not parents just don't know those places because they don't want to go there. You know, if they see like a whole lot of kids in the playground or whatever, they're like, we'll go to that other restaurant where the grumpy old adults are. But, you know, I look at my brother and sister-in-law and they know all these places. They go to they say to me the other day, we're going for this lunch for the one kid's birthday. It's over here. So I said, where the hell's that? And they're like, what? You don't know? They're these places and they do very well.
Yeah.
Always
but
full.
Those staff members have to be really special people.
Yeah.
They know all the kids by name. They know what these kids eat on their pizzas and what they don't.
Yeah.
So if they're making lots of money, then I'm very happy.
I'm happy too
because you have to pay me a lot.
And you have extra qualifications that you need to be able to serve kids. I mean, that's a difficult business. You know how kids, especially these days, I got to say, kids are very fussy. I even see. Like with the two boys, my nephews, the one will want certain food and the other one will want other food. Now, I do not remember a single meal where my mother made any of the three of us a different thing from the other two. If you didn't like something,
I don't know how your mother got it right.
Right? No, we just didn't have an option. She just said to us, if you don't eat that, then be hungry. Not my problem. And we learned very quickly. Like, I didn't particularly love mash or mince or any of that stuff, but my brother and sister did, so I just had to eat it. And if I didn't like onion, I had to take the onion out. That's all.
Yeah.
Tough.
No, I mean, I remember one of my cousins, she would cry if her rice and peas touched. Eventually, we had to get her one of those. But also, she had Tourette's, so it was part of the whole package.
Did she swear? Did she have that kind of Tourette's?
No.
Where she'd suddenly go, wanker.
No, she had tics, but not that bad. But we had to get one of those plates with the plastic like dividers that you go camping with so that her food didn't touch the others. And also I remember my brother, for some reason, I mean, my mom's a great cook, but for some reason we always ended up having fish, rice and peas on a Monday. And he's scarred from it.
so he won't have it ever again.
He's almost 40 and he can't.
Look who's
he
here.
He can't eat fish
it's,
rice.
It's Ben Karpinski. How's it, Ben?
Oh, good, guys. Happy Friday.
How was your, is it getting impossibly horribly cold in the mornings when you go for your walk?
Yeah, it's pretty cold, but I've got Hubbo joining me nowadays, so I've got someone to talk to.
We were talking about Hubbo when we had Sharman on Tuesday.
Of course, because you know Hubbo is such an interesting guy. He's a big part of our lives in so many ways.
Well, Leanne and I were just trading stories about how we were so poor. Well, not really, but we were kind of...
I know. I was falling asleep there listening to the two of the old yenters yakking on about peas and rice. And
you know, oh,
thanks, Ken.
It reminds me of that Monty Python sketch where the guys are all sitting around, four Yorkshiremen, and they're like, we were so poor that when we had to go home, we'd live in middle of the road in a pothole with a piece of tarpaulin covering us. Oh, you had tarpaulin. You were lucky. That kind of thing. It's so great.
Totally.
I do think like kids these days have options that just weren't like every birthday party. I don't know if you remember going to birthday parties or, you know, play days as a kid, but you basically got hot dogs. That was the standard fare.
That was it.
That was it, right?
And I mean, you let your kids go loose and there were no restrictions. Now you've got to tell parents, my child is not allowed fruit juice. They have this allergy. They're intolerant.
And can only have one.
My mom would fetch me with a Valoid in her bag because she knew that I'd be nauseous from all the shit that I'd eaten and was likely going to be sick. And she didn't care how much freaking tartrazine there was.
I mean, do you remember those huge packets of orange chips that they have?
Oh, those are so bad. They would stick in you'd have orange fingers for like a week.
Yes. And those things have to have been made of like the worst chemicals in the world because they were hugely addictive. I mean, kids could just eat handfuls of them at a time and they did not look healthy.
You'd put your arm in the bag to reach to the bottom.
I mean, the bags were like this big. They were as long as a person.
Yeah.
But I remember that those parties, they were so great. Your mother would drop you off and the parents never stayed. The parents didn't even like come inside. They'd drop you on the road.
They didn't care.
And you'd rock up, you'd get your packet of sugar, like your crack for the day, and then you would just either run into a jumping castle, you would just run around.
Right.
And then eventually your parents would then pick you up, and your parents might not even come in again. You'd get go back to the road. And they would go like, thanks so much for having my kid, blah, blah, blah.
They were just thrilled. I mean, now you can see it from their point of view. They were thrilled to have some time without the kid or kids.
Yeah, absolutely. And you'd know that especially because – so very often I was the last child to be fetched because my mom had just forgotten or she was just taking in more bliss.
But you said now, Ben, they just leave you. I mean, I remember playing, especially when we were living on the farm because there was just no – the only danger was like puff adders and shit like that, which now obviously I look back and I go, well
– no biggie.
No, we didn't think so as kids. You know, my mom would say to us, all right, boys, because it was me and my brother. My sister was quite a lot younger than us. So if you can go down to the river or whatever, but just put on your gum boots in case the puff adders try to bite your ankles, and take a stick. You know, that was it. That was the prep. We didn't get like a lecture on how the fangs go this way, and if you hear a rustle in the bushes, move this way, or don't move too fast, or if something jumps out, and you just it was like figure it out. And then we'd build forts in the trees. I mean, these forts were so dangerous. I remember my brother and his friend and me and my friend, because they were also brothers, we dug into a clay embankment. This is in a place called Winterskloof in KwaZulu-Natal. It's like in the middle of what I promise you is a tropical rainforest. And there was this very clayey soil, right? We dug a passage that was just big enough for a person. It's like, you know, like a square passage about 2 meters into this thing, which was so dangerous because it could have collapsed on us. You know, I mean, we just thought this was the coolest thing ever. We were going to build this amazing, intricate underground network of tunnels. And we were, you know, between the ages of, I suppose, 9 and 14 between all of us. And When the parents found out about this thing, there was hell to pay. We all got a hiding because this was so dangerous and stupid, and you could be buried under this huge expanse of earth, and we'd never find you again, and what an irresponsible, stupid thing to do. But we loved it, and we had to be caught to get into trouble. And most of the time,
that's the thing. We didn't really share what we were doing during our day.
No.
I mean, I would get on my bike at 7 a.m.
Yeah.
I'd put a map book in my basket, and my friend and I would go until the sunset. We, in the meantime, had put out felt fires, these dangerous felt fires.
Yeah, exactly.
Where we'd been fetching buckets from the neighbors and throwing buckets of water onto these felt fires, lifting up rocks and uncovering scorpions and spiders and falling. My knees were permanently open to the elements from roller skating and falling off of my bike. And it's just hard. And we didn't talk about that around the table when we got home.
No, your parents would say, well, how was your day? And you go like, yeah, it was fine. Meanwhile, you'd been up to all kinds of shit. And you talk about collecting scorpions and snakes and things. I mean, my brother and I think we tried to make our own zoo. Like we would capture any kind of creature, like really stupidly dangerous insects and reptiles that were just, I mean, I tried to capture every kind of frog I could find. And then we'd have like a place where we'd try to keep them in captivity, which was, they always died, but I mean, my parents never said, be careful, those ones are poisonous, or don't pick that one up by the tail or whatever. We just had to kind of figure it out. The fact that we got to adulthood looking back now is kind of remarkable.
Yeah, I always look back at this, and I think the words be careful are probably the worst words you can ever tell anybody, because nothing ever great has happened after that. No one ever told the greatest people on this earth to be careful, and they went, yeah, actually, like, Columbus, I'm not going to go get on that ship and sail over there. Or,
well,
it's like the worst thing you can tell someone, be careful.
You're absolutely right, especially to adults. But I mean, to kids, parents are almost saying that like as a safeguard. Well, I told them to be careful if they come back with half their leg gone, you know? So,
yeah, I guess because kids are fucking expensive. So if they break or if they die, then you think, that was a waste.
Yeah, I know.
That was a waste of 10 years and my free time.
Right.
So I guess, yeah, it's obviously a safety thing.
Parallel Parking says, my child is a transgender, climate-changed, anti-aborted TikTok savant, so it can't come to your party. That's exactly the kind of excuse you'd hear now, right? Carl says, I wish I was a dad back then. Now I have to go to these fucking kids' parties, and each time I want to hang myself. Boring people at the kids' parties, huh? My daughter's school has prohibited homemade birthday cakes. Only shop confectionery. What a lot of shit.
Someone put a marijuana cake on the table.
Steph says, I used to make chlorine and milk in a glass Sprite bottle and explode. Absolutely. Like par for the course.
I mean, I remember going into the garage and finding everything that had a danger sign on it and mixing it in a bucket. And at one point, my little cousin came over to see what the big girls were doing. She put her head over the bucket and inhaled the stuff. She coughed for about an hour and was vomiting, and I just kept on making her drink milk and told her not to tell anybody.
Yeah, you were so worried about you. I was more worried about getting into trouble with my parents than anything else. Like, if I got into shit at school, I'd be only too happy as long as they didn't tell my parents, you know? And I was we used to still get, like, hidings at school from the headmaster. And then we'd make like lines on our ties. But if my parents found out I got a hiding, I'd get another one.
Yeah.
rightly so.
Not this thing of
rightly so.
Like now when teachers have to discipline, and by discipline I mean like ask you to go and, you know, sit in a corner or have some quiet time or write out some lines or see the headmaster if you've been really bad. I don't even know what they do to discipline kids these days, because kids are doing things that I suppose they could probably get away with in our day, but now the punishment's so different. But if we went to the headmaster, then, you know, he'd give you...
They probably have to go to a psychologist, the school psychologist for punishment.
Yeah, that's probably what it is. And then the parents will take the kid's side nowadays. They'll say like, oh, you know, your punishment was too severe on my child, my poor precious little... Ninikins, this, you know, how can you do this? He's a very sensitive child. Like, Nobody asked us those questions. In those days, the parents and the teachers ganged up on you. Not the not you with your parents against the teacher. The poor teacher was, you know, they were part of the enemy from my point of view.
I'll give you something to cry about was the phrase.
Right.
You know, guys, I think always this is like one of those generational discussions, because every generation that becomes older thinks the next generation is soft as shit.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's been going forever. Like, it's hard to think that kids in the 70s were ever thought of as being soft, but the generation in the 50s probably thought they were soft. So I was having this thought the other day, because these things often pop up. But like, there's got to be a place where we can objectively say which generation is softer than the next. And I think we are actually completely at that stage now, where it's not even about, oh, you're just old.
No,
I think this shit really has. It's got to the point now where it's objectively worse and softer and stupider, and without a shadow of doubt.
I think you're right. I mean, you look at how people are triggered. I mean, that word never existed when we were kids. And who knows, kids were probably going through as much trauma, if not more, then, because they weren't the kind, you know, you didn't have a recourse to anywhere else. I mean, I remember I threatened my parents once. I said to them, I'll call, what was it, Childline, or what was the thing called?
Yeah.
If you punish me, I'll call Childline. My mother said, you do that and you won't even make it into the mortuary van.
See, yep. Good parenting right there.
The thing is,
Childline was different in those days too. My brother called Childline the once.
Oh, really?
And my mom grabbed a phone from him and used that exact phrase. Now I'm going to give him something to cry about, and slammed the phone down.
See, solid parenting.
Yeah.
Do you remember, like as a kid, there was Childline, but then did you remember those ads that would play? I think it was called Boys Town. Like, if you were a really fucked up child, they would send you to Boys Town.
Yes.
That was always a threat to my household too.
Yes. You'll go to Boys Town. But in my parents' generation, there was a place called St. George's or something with George in it, my father used to tell me about, which was a reformatory. It wasn't like Boys Town was a place for kids who'd had either they'd been addicted to something, or they had learning difficulties, or they'd been troublesome children, or whatever. There were different terms for them in those days. But Boys Town also sounded like it could have been quite a jol. Like they had these, you know, went on all these excursions, and like you'd see the
really
boys. Well, that's what I heard. I mean, I don't know.
If anybody's listening,
the Scouts
went to Boys Town. I want to know what that was like. But
it was like jail.
Well, this
it was basically, yeah, if you're a really unruly child, you got sent there and it was not fun.
it was like Houghton House for addicts.
Well, this reformatory that my dad used to tell me about put the fear of God into me. He said they have metal beds in a big hall, and you have one book, and you have to wear the same clothes every day, and you don't get to shower and bath. And you will be punished every single day. They will just punish you, even if you do only good things. They will punish you every day. I thought, Jesus, that place sounds shit. I'm going to do whatever I can stay out of that.
Yeah, I think there was a change of management, and that became Boys Town. You didn't get the book. There was no book. All the above, no book. My brothers used to, because they were such dicks to me growing up, because I was obviously the youngest, and they used to terrorize me at any given stage, no matter what day it was. Could be my birthday, could be Christmas. They were looking to terrorize me, and they would always joke how they're gonna send me off to Boys Town, and they'll be there because no one likes me. And then there used to be those ads on TV. I just remember, like, there were these horrible ads about these kids, and they all looked like. They all looked like they were the ones that weren't accepted into Hitler Youth. They were like the outliers. It was the saddest thing. And they got sent there, and you can just imagine the amount of buggery and beating up on a daily basis that would take place in that place. I'd love to, like, if you don't know what we're talking about here, I'm thinking this must sound so strange, but this was actually ads on TV. This would run in prime time. You'd be watching Beverly Hills 90210, yes. And then the Boys Town ad would come on. I'm not going there.
Oh my God, that's horrible. It was terrifying.
Tracy says, Gareth, you got the sales pitch version of Boys
Town. Yeah, I saw that. Nice. Oh my God. Listen, I'll tell you what, we didn't have it tough, since this is the kind of the theme for this morning, without us even thinking it was going to be the theme. But there were certain things about growing up in the 80s and 90s that were You know, a bit suspect. Like, you think back now. I mean, we talk about the food that we used to eat at parties, and that's just the tip of the iceberg, because there was no, like, health and safety anywhere. I mean, I remember people used to – we had friends who had motorbikes and four-wheelers and things, and we never wore helmets or protective anything.
No.
I mean,
bike had back brakes, for crying out loud.
I remember I learnt to drive, and I could barely reach the pedals. I mean, I still can't drive properly, so you know, you give me shit, but
– this is true.
But, I mean, we didn't have any rules. You kind of just figured it out. And, you know, one of the older kids would teach you how to, you know, drive a car or how to, and we would dig holes and we would waste water and we would set fire to things. And I mean, Zach says here, you know, Zach Lesupi says, I realize now burning aerosol canisters and waiting near the fire for explosions was fucking dangerous because you never knew which direction it would fly in. I mean, you know, we knew a kid who had one eye because he'd lost his eye in like a stick fight. He was one of our friends. He had one fucking eye. You know, this is not – so we obviously had nicknames galore, but this was the kind of thing that happened. Yeah. It sounds like we were feral, yeah. But I mean, this is probably
– No, it does.
This is a healthy upbringing in my opinion.
I'm remembering after we'd gone to one of these Coral Verse things – which was always at night. We got onto the bus and got dropped off at the school at night.
Yes.
And while we were waiting for our parents, my one friend, Amber Shaw, picked up this enormous rock.
Oh, God.
And we were throwing them over the fence, and I didn't see it coming, and it hit me in my eye socket.
Oh, Jesus.
I probably had a broken eye socket, but I had a black eye for about 4 months.
Oh, my God.
No. We didn't go to the doctor or anything. It was just like, Leanne, black eyed Leanne for 4 months.
Do you remember those statues they used to have in all the shops? It was like made out of plastic or fiberglass or whatever.
That little child with the one leg.
The little girl with the crippled girl with the one leg.
Yes.
And then you would, do you remember those things?
Yeah.
It was that you could put money in the tin.
Yes, you could put money in the tin. It was for kids who were crippled or
in their head.
Yes, in the head. You could even put money in the head. That's right. And my mother would always like, look at that. She said, look at you. That could be you. You must be careful. And there are children who are much less fortunate than you. You know? I mean, it's like when you think about it, it's pretty wild. And I'm so happy. We would disappear.
Yeah.
We would leave the house on holidays. And we wake up early. We would leave the house and we would be somewhere. We'd climb a mountain, we'd go down to the river, or we'd be at a friend's house. And if the friend lived in the suburbs, we'd be riding our bikes up and down the street, or we'd be causing shit somewhere. We'd be like fighting with the next door neighbors or whatever. There'd be something going on. And then we'd come home at like 5 or 6. As long as we were back before the sun came up, I mean, before the sun went down, we were good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then
they'd say, you weren't really asked about what
hey,
you
boys,
were
what did you do? And we'd be like, nothing. And that was okay.
And we were also at this stage teaching each other about sex. We weren't getting sex education at school or from our parents.
No.
You know, maybe if you were lucky, they might have given you a book. We didn't have the internet. So we had to find things out, like what a blowjob was. And sometimes there were all these myths attached to it.
Oh, yeah.
We learned the wrong thing. Like, I thought that women gave birth out of their arseholes until I was like 16.
That's the exact same thing happened at Boys Town with those kids, Leanne. They had to find out.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, I don't think that we've necessarily come out too badly in the long run. I mean, we've got a sense of humor, right?
Yeah, but everything that's been described in the last 10 minutes is all tactile stuff. Like, even with Leanne forcing her cousin to inhale those fumes. When, like kids, and I always hate saying this, but kids nowadays, like, all they've got is a screen. So they don't ever get to go anywhere and see things and touch things because they're just screen-based. You've got to see, touch,
yeah.
And,
like,
just to use, like Leanne's sex thing, like in the South, they were prodding and probing and doing all kinds of things to find out. Now kids are watching porn, and it's not the same.
So you're saying it's better to be prodded and probed.
Well, Gareth, it gets you. I think you learn better. I'll just use that one example. Oh, but you've got to have you got to be tactile as a human being. You've got to physically touch and smell and see and go towards things. You can't it's the biggest injustice to a human being to learn things on the screen. Like, it's nice to learn, like, maybe
that's how children learn. They put things in their mouths all the time, yeah, whether it's sand or worms,
especially in your case.
We'd put anything in our mouth in the south.
In the south.
Is that what you're saying, Ben?
In the south.
No, it was just segueing to your story, how you had to just learn things. Like,
Jesus, that's funny. That's so great. Oh, okay.
You'd have some boy from school going, now let me show you what a blowjob is.
Oh, wow. Unbelievable. Listen to Pumlani's story. This is phenomenal. This is the best story of the morning. Pumlani says, a kid farted in primary school and the whole class got a hiding. If that happened today, it's going to trend for a week on news sites. Yeah, you're going to have News24 going, it's a terrible injustice. All these children got a hiding because the one child passed wind. I mean, come on. That was the fact that Pumlani remembers that is amazing. One kid farts, the whole class got a hiding. I mentioned that I went to my old school on Monday and I spoke to them about, like, what, you know, what the future holds for them, because some of the jobs that they are going to end up doing they don't exist yet. And part of I kept the speech fairly sanitary, but I was thinking while I was sitting there that our matric group was so badly behaved. I remember we used to do a thing called 40 days when you had 40 days left of matric, and we got to have a party on the school grounds, but it was like very low key. There was no alcohol, obviously, but I mean, people smuggled it in and we were pretty rough. I went to a government school. I didn't go to any fancy school. Mm. And we planted a tree in the middle of the rugby field, a big tree. We blew up condoms and tied them to the teachers' doors of the classrooms that we hated, like the teachers who we didn't like. And like wrote like four misses whatever on the condoms that we'd blown up. We got a power, those power screwdrivers, and we took the headmaster's door off his office and replaced it with a door from the prefect's room, which had a big hole in it, which someone had punched or kicked a hole in. And we spray painted and graffitied the wall. And I mean, we were really badly, if I think back now, the fact that we got away, well, we didn't get away with it. The next morning, we were all called into an assembly, and they basically threatened us and said, your matric dance is going to be canceled. Forget about it. You might not even get your matric results. You're all the most terrible people in the world. I mean, the headmaster was screaming. He was screaming at us, and none of us bust each. We all, like, nobody said, oh, it was that one who blew up the condoms, or is that one who planted the tree, or that one who unscrewed your door. And we stuck together, and it taught us like a couple of really valuable lessons. And when I was there, I kind of afterwards mentioned to the only teacher who's still left there from my time, I said to her, yeah, you remember that whole 40 days thing? Cause we got into serious shit for that. And she just started laughing. She said, funny thing is, I remember that matric group and I don't remember any of the ones since then. I remember so many of you. I can remember your faces, your names. You know, it was like you were naughty, but you weren't shooting up heroin in the passages, or like there weren't like people sexually abusing each other or bullying to the point where a kid was bleeding or crying, or, you know,
it was the type of stuff that was just annoying enough to drive adults absolutely demented because they didn't know how to handle it.
Right.
We used to lock our teachers in. It's slipped my mind. What was the room called in the classroom, which had all the storage stuff?
The storeroom, Leanne. It's, funnily enough, it's called a
it was called something else, man.
I'm fairly sure it's a storeroom, but okay.
And then Tracy has another great comment, if you want to have a look at
that. She says, in high school, one of the senior boys smuggled a chicken into assembly in a pillowcase. And every time the chicken saw bright lights. It would cock-a-doodle-doo, stitches rolling on the floor. So funny. God, that is funny. That is so great. Well, I mean, I told you my mother was expelled from school and she tried to keep the secret from us for a long time. But we eventually found the story out because my mother, my father, and their two friends, who are also a married couple, were sitting one night when I was probably about 10, 11, and they were all talking, you know, around the table, and my friend who was their son and I were eavesdropping. And they basically all admitted around the table that they'd all been expelled for some reason, all four, like my parents and his parents. And we were like, oh, God, no wonder they've tried to keep the secret from us. Because once your kid finds out that you were expelled, they're not going to listen to you.
They can hold it against
right.
you.
Right.
Yeah.
But you were expelled. So she got expelled for letting off one of those stink bombs in church. And I mean, they were so furious with it because obviously there was a priest who was running the church service, right? And he went, who let off a, where is that stink coming from? And then they knew it was my mother and her three friends because they were the only ones laughing. Everybody else was like running around trying to cover up their noses. Anyway, it's 7 o'clock. We got to get to the rest of the show. We got lots of stuff to get to. And if you've got something you want to tell us,
stockroom.
Ask a stockroom. Thank you.
Almost. Stockroom.
Stockroom, storeroom. And you used to lock the teachers in?
Yeah, often. And they'd go in and shuffle around to find some kind of pastel chalk.
That's
and you'd
great.
Lock the door behind them.
Oh, I love that. That's awesome. You do it often. All right. We'll be back in a moment or two. CliffCentral.com. It is a Friday morning. A whole lot of we grew up tough shit this morning. It's lots of fun. CliffCentral.com.